Or really, I should say, hotter. Every day I'm hotter for him. But it's more than lust that I feel. Griffin's not only my closest friend in France, he's my daily companion. It almost feels like we're two travelers exploring the world of Paris together. After hours, it's like we've taken a sabbatical from life, and we're intrepid wanderers, getting lost and found together in the streets, passages, and alleys of the City of Light. Him and me. Me and him. I've shared a house with another person, but I never felt like I wanted more time. But that's what it's like now. When I say goodbye to Griffin at the end of each night, my heart is a little bit lonelier. And when I wake up, that organ is eager once more, knowing I'll see him soon at the office. When I see him in the conference room, I want to grin, to flirt, to give him 1,000 private looks that only he'll understand. Even in the lab, when he translates the names of chemicals, I can hear him in my mind saying other things like, "You look beautiful. That's so you." And, "Let me take you out for a glass of wine." When I leave the office, sometimes we shop, since that's where I experience the real brunt of knowing or not knowing words. On a Saturday afternoon, we go to the open-air market on Rue de Grenelle under the metro bridge, and he urges me to barter for a lamp I want. It's emerald green with a hanging chain as a switch. It's so deliciously antique that I can't resist it. A stout woman with curly hair runs the stall. I ask her what year it's from. I ask if she'll take less. I tell her I will return.
Je reviendrai.
Griffin wants me to say that because the French have a specific word for come back. They don't say return, he tells me. So many words, so many new ones. My brain swims with new combinations of the alphabet. As we wander to the other end of the market, buying walnuts and bread, I say the names of everything I see. And I don't just say the names, I use them in a sentence. Then we revenir, and I buy the lamp.
"You're learning," he says with a proud smile.
I might have doubted the blonde chocolatier, but I believe him. I believe him because he makes me buy contact lens solution that evening. And then he kisses me goodnight, lingering on each cheek. He tells me he's glad he could be there to help me at the pharmacy this time, but he's even more glad he could see me do it on my own. The next week, he shows me the coolest metro entrances, and then we decide to find more sundials, hunting for one engraved by Salvador Dali before we track down a sundial in the courtyard of a hotel frequented by the philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau.
Legend has it, he was in love with the woman who ran the hotel and professed as much in a letter to her one day, Griffin muses as we regard Rousseau's sundial.
And did she smother him in kisses and say she was madly in love too, I ask, hungry for this romantic tale. He shakes his head, a rueful smile on his face.
No, it was, sadly, unrequited.
My heart aches the littlest bit when I watch him walk away first. Has there ever been a crueler word than unrequited? I try my best not to linger on it, telling Griffin I have something to show him. His eyes twinkle with excitement as I play tour guide this time, escorting him across the city to track down an angel 3 stories tall serving as a column in the corner of an apartment building from 1860. He cranes his neck heavenward, checking out the carving.
How did you know of this?
After I came across the first 2 angels, I did some research. There are angel statues and carvings and little hidden angels all over the city. You could add angels to your list of Parisian quirks. He turns his eyes to me.
You think I have a list of Parisian quirks?
I nod. Yes, oddities and curiosities, sundials, clocks, metro entrances. I think you know the most unusual details about Paris. You're a student of this city, every nook and cranny. He shakes his head, disagreeing.
There's so much I don't know.
I stab my finger against his chest. That's my point exactly. Every day you uncover more. You remind me of what Elise said.
We should enjoy each day like a fruit and eat it. He quirks an eyebrow as we stroll down a quiet street.
You think I eat Paris every day?
And you wake up the next day with another appetite and another. He wiggles an eyebrow.
That's not the only thing I want to eat.
You say everything like it's naughty.
Everything should be naughty, but especially when you talk of fruit and eating. You give me no choice.
We stop at the corner of the street, and he repeats what he just said in French, reminding me that he does have a choice, at least when it comes to his time and his talents. He chooses to be generous with his time. He gives of himself freely. I know he's getting something out of these language lessons. I know he's inching closer and closer to his brother's goal. But still, it hardly feels equal. That's why I do my best to make sure the explorer in him is happy. I research places to go that are off the beaten path. Like the next week, when I take him to see antique signs scattered around the city. I snap photos of him under them and make up silly stories, and I show him more angels that I uncover, including an unusually sensual one, clearly female, that almost looks like a precursor to the Victoria's Secret angels.
My turn to play photographer. Your turn to pose, he says, shooing me under the angel. I give him my best pout, and he shakes his head. Just be yourself.
Fine, I say, and flash a smile.
Yes, that. Now post it to your feed and use the hashtag sexy as an angel.
Please, I scoff. He shrugs.
Just send it to me then.
Why?
Because you're sexy as fuck and I want to look at it tonight.
A shooting star ignites in my chest. You do? My throat is dry. His eyes seem to blaze with heat as he looks at me.
Yeah, but tug down the neckline just a bit, right? We'll shoot another.
I roll my eyes. Stop it.
I'm not joking.
I guess I'm not either. I do as he asks, and I send it to him later. I'm not sure what he's going to do with it. I learn when he texts me at midnight. Griffin.
Thank you for the picture. It made my night.
That's all I need. Inside my flat with the light from the moon filtering through my windows, the sounds of the city flitting into my home, my hand finds its way inside my panties, where I ache for him. Already, with one touch, I'm soft and wet and needy. My knees fall open, and my mind paints the most delicious images. Griffin over me, licking me, kissing me, sucking me. His hands traveling everywhere, his tongue painting a trail down my skin, his words whispering across my body. My mind races, speeds up, slips back in time, too, to 5, 10 minutes ago in a flat across the city. There, a gorgeous Englishman stands in a tiny kitchen, opens his texts, and finds my photo from earlier that day. He hardens and groans, looking at me, tugging at my neckline. No time to waste, he unzips his jeans, wraps his hand around his cock, and strokes. I moan out loud. It sounds obscene to my ears. It feels that way as I imagine him. He doesn't even go to the couch or the bed. He's too turned on, too aroused. He shoves his jeans to his hips, tightens his grip, his fist tunneling up and down his hard length. He's never been this aroused, never wanted someone so much. He fucks his hand harder and faster, wishing it were my mouth, my hand, me. He craves the wetness in me, wants to thrust into the aching center of my body, to take me, fuck me, have me, own me. His thighs tighten and he groans a loud feral sound, a wish for me, my name on his lips. Husky, dirty, filthy, he growls it. It's not the first time he's come thinking of me. It won't be the last. And as I picture him climaxing in the dark, in his hand, my image blazing before his eyes, I do the same, pleasure blurring my brain. His name is on my lips. It's not the first time I come saying his name. I don't think it'll be the last. I bend my face to a huge bouquet of pink hyacinths, closing my eyes as I inhale. Your turn, I say when I open them. He does as I instruct, here at the flower market in front of Palais de Tokyo.
Smells like flowers.
I swat him. I've been doing a lot of that. I can't seem to resist touching him. We wander to the next stall, where I snap photos of purple irises, peach tulips, lavender hydrangea, and sunflowers 6 feet tall. He stands next to one.
Still taller,
he says with a wink. Just a little. He sniffs the sunflower, crinkling his nose.
This stinks.
Sunflowers are not known for their smell.
Which is your favorite to smell?
Honeysuckle. But they don't have that here.
Which is your favorite that's here?
He gestures to the vast display of petals and stems. I nibble on the corner of my lips and spin, checking out stall after stall, all teeming with flowers, bursting with bouquets that light up my senses. I point to several buckets with soft purple flowers. Lilacs, I say, and we head to the nearest lilac stall, where Griffin guides me through what he wants me to say to the florist. He makes me ask question after question, likely driving the florist bananas. This isn't Berlitz with Griffin. This isn't someone teaching me travel phrases like, can you recommend a good restaurant? It's trial by fire. It's immersion. But the language isn't the only thing I'm becoming immersed in. I'm becoming immersed in him. I want to ask him more about his bucket list. I want to know what else is on it, to know what matters to him. But that feels too personal, too tender, like touching a wound that's still bruised and hurting. After he's exhausted me, he gives me one more thing to ask for.
One bouquet of lilacs to take home. And you'll want that one, he says, pointing to the most perfect one.
When the florist gives me the price, I root around in my purse for bills and coins. But once I look up, Griffin is handing the bearded man the euros, and then my teacher gives me the bouquet.
For you.
Really? My heart squeezes.
Yes, really.
I hold them to his nose. What do they smell like? He inhales, then steps closer, bringing his mouth to my ear.
Like this woman I've been spending all my time with and am dying to kiss.
I melt from head to toe, my bones dissolving. I'm burning for him, aching to touch him, longing to be kissed. As I watch him walk the other way, looking back at me once with such heat in his eyes that I'm sure he's waging the same internal battle I am, I know that this is the scent I want to bottle. I want to remember this day. I want to open the top of the perfume, close my eyes, let the scent drift into my mind, and remember what it feels like to fall in love. But more than that, I want to remember what it feels like to fall in love and no longer have the will to stop it, to throw all the reasons out the window and let it happen, come what may.
Chapter 18. Griffin. The days unfold like this. At dawn, a run. Then I help Joy at work in the morning. In the afternoon, I focus on written translations. In the early evening, I meet her, and we walk and we talk. I make her tell me about her day, and I ask her questions. As we wander through Saint-Germain-des-Prés, over the Pont Neuf, and along the Seine, stopping for a chocolate éclair, café noisette, or a glass of wine, she makes strides, each day sounding better, gaining confidence. We stroll through the markets, we dart into shops, and we meander past the Boucanistes, where one day Joy chats with Julien, finding the words to buy a dozen sepia-tinted postcards of Paris. "You have never bought a woman by before," Julien remarks to me, his voice low, his words so quick I'm sure she won't understand. "Ah, that must mean I really like you," I tease. He grunts. "It means you like her." I wave a hand dismissively. "It means you have good postcards, mate." He grumbles a thank you, then hands the cards to Joy. As we pass other stalls peddling old books, vintage posters and Life magazines from decades ago, Joy asks what we talked about. "I heard the word like," she says, an inquisitive note to her voice. "Good ears. He said you really liked his postcards," I say with a smirk. "I think you're lying." "What do you think he asked me then?"
"Something else," she says.
"Something like what?"
"Something you don't want to tell me."
But I do want to tell her.
"He thinks I like you."
"Oh yeah?" I nod.
"Crazy old man."
"Insane, clearly."
"Absolutely batty."
I point to the pack of cards in her hand. "What are you going to do with those?"
"I'll send them to my sister."
"In the post?" She laughs.
"No, I'll do it the modern way. By snapping cell phone photos and sending them immediately. Instant gratification."
"Gratification instantanée."
She raises an eyebrow. "Maybe you should teach me how to say delayed gratification too." "That's what I'm living every day. But then, delayed means the gratification with her will eventually come. I have no idea if it'll always be out of reach." We take lunch together on a Wednesday, and after we finish, we turn a corner onto a narrow cobblestone street as the sky rumbles. She gasps,
"I've been waiting for it to rain."
"It's rained a few times in the 2 months we've worked together." She shakes her head.
"Not enough. I want the rain that makes me scurry under an awning. I want the rain that filmmakers can only wish for."
I arch a brow. "What's that?"
"Rain that drenches the streets, that makes them look like jewels."
Images of wet, sparkling roads unfurl before my eyes.
"That's what filmmakers want. They often hire crews to spray water on streets because the best shot in all of film is a street after a rain. It sparkles. I want that kind of rain."
"Do you really want that kind of rain, or do you just want the after effects?"
"I'll take the rain to get the diamonds," she says,
then reaches into her bag and fishes around for something. She extracts an umbrella, a tiny little thing, but when she opens it, it wilts. The spokes don't work.
"Merde,"
she says, and I laugh. "Such a good student."
"My umbrella is broken," she says in French.
"Even better."
"No. What's even better is shopping."
She points to a store down the street where the window displays an umbrella with black and white polka dots. It's like a homing beacon for Joy, and she marches to the shop through the drizzle. She pushes on the door, and I follow her inside. But she stops in her tracks and brings her hand to her mouth.
"The polka dot one? The price is bonkers, right?"
She shakes her head and speaks in a reverent whisper.
"No, look."
A ruby red umbrella is perched in a metal stand, its carved wooden handle poking out the top. Running a hand lovingly along the fabric, Joy looks as if she's stroking a cat.
"I'll take it."
She grabs the umbrella, heads to the counter, and buys the new one, disposing of the old. When we step outside, big thick drops fall from the sky, and Joy opens the jewel-colored umbrella. She twirls it above her head, smiling under the cherry red canopy she's given herself.
"Join me under my umbrella."
I don't know how she does it, but she makes everything sound like an invitation to travel to the place I most want to be right now. I take the umbrella in one hand, hold it above us, and wrap the other one around her shoulder. She loops her arm around my waist, and we walk in the rain. She's not due back at the office for 20 minutes, and she makes no move in that direction. She looks at me, her expression serious.
"What else is on the bucket list?"
I tense as the second item blasts like a neon sign in the night. "Sleep with all the French girls." I don't want to get into that one.
"Yeah, a number of things."
I squeeze her shoulder, hoping a bit of contact will deflect her interest. But she's no cat, distracted by a laser pointer. She's a brilliant woman, hungry to know the truth.
Evasive much? She says.
I'm not evasive. Is it private? Is it a secret? It's okay if it is. I'm just curious, since it's literally the most important thing to you.
The rain slaps against the streets like a persistent wet drumbeat. Like it's the soundtrack to this decision urging me to open up more to her. She's helping me with the list. I suppose the least I can do is tell her what else is on it.
I don't think you'll like all of them.
You might as well tell me now, then.
The first is live in Paris.
You mentioned that. You said Ethan had wanted to, so you're doing that.
And you know the run a marathon one, so I'm working on that. And then there's help someone with a dream.
And you're doing that.
There are a few others I've done already, too.
And those are the ones I dislike?
I shake my head. No, but you might like this one. Number 5. Have 6-pack abs.
Her eyebrows wiggle.
Ooh la la.
She eyes my stomach.
You've accomplished that?
I pat my belly.
You're welcome to check for yourself.
She darts her hand sideways, patting my abs over the fabric of my shirt. She slow claps.
Well done, Griffin. Well done.
I stop to take a quick bow, then keep walking. She nudges me.
And yet, I don't think that's the one I dislike.
I steel myself, then say it. The second is sleep with all the French girls.
She jams an elbow into my side.
What a little piggy.
I laugh as the rain hammers the ground and we take refuge under an awning.
I told you that you wouldn't like it.
Did you do that? Sleep with all the girls?
The question seems to taste bitter to her.
Do you really want to know?
I toss back.
That's a yes, then.
Why are you asking if you don't want to know? She huffs.
Just say you didn't.
I narrow my eyes, trying to figure her out.
Are you jealous?
She scoffs.
Not at all.
I hold up a thumb and forefinger.
A little?
Not in the least. I smile.
Good, because I didn't. Then I add, not all of them, at least.
Oh, you're awful.
I swear I didn't go overboard on that. Obviously, it's an item you follow to the spirit, not the letter of the law. But cut me some slack. I'm a 30-year-old single guy living in Paris.
She stares at me with narrowed eyes. I wrap an arm tighter around her.
Would it make you feel better knowing you're the only one I want to sleep with now?
She blinks.
Really?
This surprises you?
Yes, it does.
You think I want to sleep with other women?
I don't know.
Do you want me to want to sleep with other women?
She breathes out heavily, then whispers a no. A jolt rushes through me.
God, how I want to touch her. Do you have any idea how much I've wanted to get you naked since I met you?
No. How much?
So much you really ought to stop asking about other women. I don't think about other women. I think about you all the time. So much it drives me crazy. So much I want to say screw the friendship rules and kiss you senseless.
Would you kiss me senseless?
Life is short. Events can change everything in the blink of an eye. Plans can crater. You have to take your chances. This is the chance I most want to take.
I would absolutely kiss you senseless.
She leans against the wall under the awning, the red umbrella still over our heads as the rain pours down. With my free hand, I reach for her face. She shudders when I touch her, a beautiful, sensual shiver that seems to move through her whole body. From this, from my hand on her face, cupping her cheek, I'm keenly aware that I want this first kiss to be spectacular for her. I want it to be everything for her.
a kiss she remembers for all time. When I'm gone, in some far-off land and she's still here, I want her to linger on this kiss. I take my time, memorizing every second. The way her lips part, how her eyes stay locked with mine. They darken, shining with desire, with longing. A flush crawls up her neck. That delicious, seductive neck I've been dying to kiss for so long. Once you have a first kiss with someone, you don't get a do-over. You have to make it count. Make it worth every second of anticipation. I don't just want to sleep with you. I want to kiss you. Do you have any idea how much I've wanted to kiss you? Her hand darts out, curling around the fabric of my shirt at my belly. How much? I inch closer. Our bodies line up. I press against her, so she knows the answer to the question. So much that it's all I think about. So much. I've wanted it for so long. When I dip my head toward her, her eyes float closed with an expression of both utter contentment and rampant longing. Here, under the umbrella, as the rain drums on the streets of Paris, I brush my lips to hers. And it's everything I imagined it would be. She melts into my touch, and I take my time, my lips tracing hers, her breath ghosting over mine. Our bodies slide together. We are what we've wanted to be, lovers who can't wait to touch. She tugs me even closer, and I know this kiss is about to blast through the atmosphere. I'm sure I can't hold back any longer. The moment for slow and sweet has passed, and now that we've touched, a dam is going to break. I'm going to devour her lips. She's going to consume mine. We're going to skip the rest of the day, stumble to her apartment, fall against the door, and at last come together. I can feel the pressure building inside both of us like a gasket about to burst. As I clasp her face harder, my lips eager and urgent, her teeth clicking against mine, a loud trill sounds from my pocket. "Ignore it," she murmurs. But it's the ringtone from my boss. I groan. "Fucking hell." I separate from her, and it's like an affront to the fabric of the universe. "Hello? Glad I caught you. Can you come see me?"
Chapter 19. Joy. I stopper frustration. I bottle longing. I mix sensuality. My afternoon is bathed in replay of a kiss that ended too soon. So I do what I know how to do. I try to capture it, to reproduce a moment in time. What is the scent of a kiss you desperately need more of? What is the smell of something that tempts you too much? You tell yourself you'll resist. You believe so heartily that the past mistakes will ground you. They'll keep you from even tiptoeing into something risky. Relationships are fraught with danger, after all. They lead to closeness, and closeness leads to losing yourself. But when you've refrained and restrained, and you're twisting and turning and wanting so much, at last, you give in. You surrender to it. It's not that I can't fight it. It's that I no longer want to. That kiss is still on my lips. I run a finger over my bottom lip absently as I work. I'm both here and there. Both in the lab and under the umbrella, the rain pattering around us. I'm daydreaming about his lips brushing against mine as I combine odorant molecules like a chef might do with spices, trying to craft the illusion of wandering down the street in the rain, the scent of possibility heavy in the drops. A little of this, a little of that, some molecules from an earthy mix, some more from a citrusy, airy one, another from the essence of jasmine. I draw a deep inhale. It's not yet there, but it's something.
There's a knock on the door. I look up to see Marisol in the window. I motion for her to come in. She enters, a thoroughly professional smile on her face.
How's everything going? I've been sending progress reports to the corporate headquarters, raving about you.
Thank you, I say, speaking in French. I am grateful. She nods appreciatively and gestures to the vials and tubes in front of me. Switching to English, I give her a quick update on what I'm working on.
May I smell it?
It's not finished yet.
I don't mind.
She strides to me and I offer her the little tester. She wafts it under her nose and murmurs,
C'est fantastique.
The fact that she said that in French, a perfectly au naturel reaction, gives me a little thrill.
You need to keep working on this, she adds.
I will. We chat more, and she thanks me again for my time and leaves. When she's gone, I daub the tiniest bit on my neck. Then I head out for the night. I'm meeting Elise for a drink. Wine is a requirement at times like these. When a man kisses you breathless, then takes off before you can make any plans, you're legally required to drink buckets of vino. At a brasserie, I order two glasses, and Elise nods her approval at my choice and my efforts to speak the language with the waiter.
Your French is much better. Your classes must be working, she says, sketching air quotes.
Her brown hair is twisted high on her head in a bun, and since she came from the office, she's sleek and elegant, in a pencil skirt and a clingy white blouse. Her stilettos are a foot tall.
They seem to be, I say.
And I can tell you're actually taking classes. I'd have thought you were spending all night fucking. My eyes widen.
Elise!
She tuts me. Oh, please. You know that's what you want to be doing. I'm amazed you're learning anything beyond the best positions for multiple orgasms. She winks, looking librarian sexy in her black glasses.
Seriously, tell me what's going on with the Brit.
I give her the quick version of the last several weeks, then detail today's turn of events. She sighs delightedly.
And you swooned, and now you want to know what's next.
Yes, she scoffs. Men are so frustrating. But even so, please tell me you're not going to play the will he call me, won't he call me game. I furrow my brow. No, I know he'll call. I was more concerned. She grabs my cheeks, cupping them.
I love you. I absolutely love you.
What was that for? I ask when she drops her hands.
For being bold, for knowing you're not going to play a waiting game.
Women spend too much time waiting for men. When you want something, you should go for it. I'd like to think I'm done with games. I suppose the only real question is, how risky is this? He's still my translator, and I want everything to go well while we work together for the next month until the assignment ends. The waiter brings our wine, and I thank him. Then Elise offers her glass to clink with mine.
To friendship, and to the possibility of a new lover for you.
I'll happily drink to both, I say, and take a sip. Elise sets her glass down.
This is what I think about the level of risk. You're going to have great sex with him, right?
A ribbon of heat unspools in me as I imagine the kind of sex we'll have.
Of course.
Then, by my estimates, great sex should keep you going for a full month. You have nothing to worry about. By the time the shine is off, the job will be ending, and you'll be able to look back without regret. But I don't like the ending she's writing for our story. In a wobbly voice, I posit what may be the truest risk of all.
What if I want it to keep going?
She draws a deep breath.
Then you'll need to let him know you want a full-time lover.
Personally, I'm partial to the part-time ones. Until then, you simply enjoy every second of the time together, and you live for the moment.
Moments are all we truly have.
Her voice downshifts to a tune I've never heard before. It's almost melancholy, and it's so unusual for my outgoing and daring friend. I raise my glass, trying to lighten the mood. May some of the next moments in life contain fantastic orgasms. Elise tips her glass to mine. Those are my favorite moments. But as she drinks, I swear I see something else in her eyes. Something sad, something that makes me wonder why Elise believes so strongly in living for the moment. I'm not sure I'll garner the answer today, so I reach into my bag for a tiny tube. "Pilfered it from the lab," I whisper, handing it to her. Naughty girl. Her eyes twinkle, the sadness wiped away. "Something new I'm working on. Tell me what you think." She uncaps it and runs the top under her nose. "Mmm." Her murmur makes my heart do a little jig. That's the sound of someone pleased. She closes her eyes. It's a summer evening, when I waited for a man to meet me at the fountain. The sun dipped lower in the sky as I checked my watch. The water and the stones behind me were damp and earthy, and my heart filled with longing. Then desire, when he arrived and kissed me like the world disappeared. When she opens her eyes, she offers a wistful smile. He's long gone, but this perfume is here to stay.
Chapter 20. Griffin. Getting called into the boss's office is never a good thing. It's not like I have a history of being some sort of hooligan at work, I just find the less the boss needs to see me, the better I'm likely doing. Especially since Jean-Paul pushed off the meeting. Shortly after he called me away, he messaged to say he couldn't meet till 5. Now it's 5, and all I've been able to think about for the last few hours is that he's reassigning me. Or Joy's company is sacking me. Or Marisol found out I'm crazy for Joy, and she thinks our relationship is inappropriate. Which doesn't sound likely at all, but my brain is a tilt-a-whirl, whipping through scenarios. All of them start with this tension in my chest, this pit in my stomach, and this stupid fear that I've put Joy and myself at risk. Even though nothing has happened. Even though there are no explicit rules forbidding a relationship between us. Still, the mind slap dashes where it fears to go the most. I take a seat in Jean-Paul's office. Glad you could make it even in the rain. It's brass monkeys outside today, isn't it? He winks, clearly proud of himself for dropping that Britishism into his conversation with me. It's absolutely brass monkeys. And I hope I didn't interrupt anything. No, nothing. Just the best kiss in my entire life. Just my entire afternoon where I sat in a cafe and stared at my phone constantly as I worked on written translations and contemplated what the hell to say to the woman I'm mad about, all the while I worried about my fucking job. Not at all. Always happy to chat. What can I do for you? That's the question, isn't it? He says with a wink, as if he's going to tell me today's tawdry tale. Leaning back in his chair, he clasps his hands behind his head and parks his feet on the desk. Tell me about your work at L'Artisan. I raise an eyebrow, wondering why he'd need to know those details since I send him regular reports, unless Marisol has complained. I sit up straighter and give an overview of my work, from the team meetings to Joy's one-on-one conversations with her scientists to the translations in the lab. And would you say your work has helped? I furrow my brow, almost wishing he'd toss out one of his inappropriate comments about a wife of his so I'd know this conversation was normal. But it doesn't feel normal. It feels like a precursor to bad news. Absolutely. The company has embarked on a number of new projects, has introduced new processes through the woman I work with. Her staff is doing well at implementing the protocols, she tells me. Maybe I'm selling it too hard. Maybe I'm like a credit card peddler in a shopping center now. But hell, I've witnessed the changes Joy has brought to her company in 8 short weeks. She's fantastic. Plus, Joy is doing well and conversing, and she's actually learning French now too, I add, though I don't say that she's getting special lessons. Interesting, Jean-Paul hums, looking mildly impressed. Most of them just want someone to be their mouthpiece. She must be a sharp lady.
She is.
I tried to tamp down the personal pride I feel. My second wife was like that. A pretty little American. She was dying to learn French. Good thing I was willing to introduce her to all the joys of our language.
I nearly groaned and sighed.
Be careful what you wish for.
Now he's going on and on about how he taught his second wife more than the language. How he taught her the spice of life. When he's done, he slaps a palm on the table.
But, you know, it goes with women. She wanted more and more, and it all just went to bollocks, right?
Second idiom in 5 minutes.
I'll have to tell Christian our boss is in rare idiomatic form today.
Totally bollocks. He wags a finger at me.
Right you are. Too right,
he says, affecting an English accent on the last one. I decide to award him a third point.
Anyway, I don't mean to be cheeky, and a fourth now, but I wanted to share some good news.
I checked in with the client and my contact there indicated they were so thrilled with your work that they're going to hire Capstone for more work as they bring on new American employees. So thank you for being a great ambassador. I swallow down my surprise.
Is that so?
He rises and offers me a hand to shake.
They think you're as fantastic as all get out.
Wait, that's an American saying. I'm going to have to hire you for my own idioms now.
Well, that'd be the cat's whiskers, Jean-Paul,
I say with a smile. He laughs.
Well done. Blimey, well done.
Not sure blimey fits, but hey, you must be knackered at the end of the day, I say, keeping up the volley. His smile spreads across his wrinkled face.
You are a top translator, the best. Go take yourself out to dinner, on me.
He hands me a gift card. I stare at it in disbelief for a moment. Then I thank him. When I leave, I breathe a sigh of relief. As I head down the stairs and into the Paris twilight, I can't help but feel I've got away with something. Instead of a reprimand, I have 50 euros on a gift card to spend at a restaurant. And as I walk down the street toward the river, I grin.
And I laugh.
Maybe I did get away with something. Maybe I'll keep getting away with it. I'll certainly try my hardest.
One egg crepe with cheese.
Christian places the order at the crepe stand near De Magot, then turns to me as he waits for his favourite crepe maker in the city to make a savoury dish.
Here's the thing. You know the risks. I'm not telling you something you don't know. The question becomes what happens when you leave for the other side of the world?
When I leave, I say coolly, because what else is there to say? There's a real expiration date to me, and I can't pretend it won't come. I've no clue when I'm returning, especially since I should be able to pick up written translation work remotely, feeding my bank account as I travel.
Ah, so she's cool with it?
I scratch my jaw and glance down the street, trying to remember how Joy has reacted to the prospect of me leaving.
Pretty sure.
Christian arches a skeptical brow.
Pretty sure?
She knows I'm going to Indonesia.
Right. But does she know you're staying there?
I sigh.
I don't even know if I'm staying. I'll probably wind up someplace else.
He draws air quotes as he repeats,
someplace else?
He shakes his head. For a man who makes a living translating words precisely, you're being awfully imprecise on this matter.
You didn't even think I should get involved with her, I fire back. And you didn't follow that advice, did you?
He says, laughing.
Not really.
My point is this. Now that you're involved, don't you think you ought at least to let her know this can only be a short-term thing? Be direct with her.
I stuff my hands into the pockets of my jeans.
I have to imagine she knows.
He rolls his eyes.
Don't imagine, just be clear like you should have been from the start.
It's never been pertinent before.
I'd say it's pertinent now.
He claps me on the back.
I think you have your work cut out for you, mate.
Good luck with that one. I wouldn't want to be you telling a woman you're hot for that you need to clock out in a month.
As I flash back to the day I ran into Joy when she was still Judy to me, I'm reminded that she wasn't looking for anything. That hasn't changed. She's still not looking for anything, and neither am I. We're Archie and Judy. And they were fine with a whole lot of not looking for anything together as they explored. It's all going to be fine. Neither one of us wants anything more. Christian laughs as he takes the crepe and bites into it. Right. As I walk along the river, I run my thumb over the list of 10. I've completed 3. I'm working on a 4th by teaching Joy French. I do the postscript on an ongoing basis by keeping in close touch with my parents. And I'm about to check off one more item. Item number 9. Take a chance on something that terrifies you. The funny thing is, going for it with Joy doesn't scare me at all. It excites me. It enlivens me. Maybe this means it doesn't quite fit the bill. But I don't care. I'm going to cross it off anyway. 9. Take a chance on something that terrifies you. Griffin. The night is young. Do you want to pick up where we left off? Because it's literally all I want to do. And I know you like it when literally means literally.
Chapter 21. Joy. I've swallowed a nest full of butterflies. Wait, butterflies don't live in nests. They live in a swarm. Actually, that's not right either. It's called an army. I remember from one of my science classes. I set a hand on my belly, trying to quell the army inside it. What is wrong with me? I'm 30. I shouldn't be this nervous. But it's not nerves. It's excitement. It's the thrill. It's the wild, fantastical feeling when you fly upside down on a roller coaster. But with an army? I scratch my head as I wait. Screw it. I need to know what it's called. As I pace across the iron footbridge in Canal St. Martin's, the emerald leaves of the trees glistening from the earlier showers, I unlock my phone. Google, what is a group of butterflies called? She answers in her pleasing robotic voice. A group of butterflies is called, fingers brush across the back of my neck,
a kaleidoscope.
I don't just shiver, I shudder. My bones melt, heat swirls through me. That voice, that accent, this man. I turn around, soft moonlight frames his face. How did you know that? He shrugs, a grin lighting up his handsome features. I want to run my fingers along his jawline, but I don't yet have the permission to touch him freely whenever I want.
Marine biology, he answers.
Butterflies aren't marine life.
True,
he says, then takes a liberty I haven't. He runs the back of his fingers across my cheek. I gasp, and then it turns into the start of a moan.
I don't know, then. I suppose I picked it up somewhere along the way. Maybe because it sounds prettier than a swarm.
He takes a beat, then says it again.
Kaleidoscope.
It's both beautiful and sensuous, like everything he says to me. It is prettier, I say breathlessly, because his fingers are on my face. His body is inches away. The air crackles between us, and my body hums as if I've tuned in to his frequency. There's something in the air tonight, and it's the anticipation of a night that's not ending. It's only beginning.
I'm glad you could meet me here. Do you know why I chose it?
I shake my head, swallowing past the dryness in my throat. I want him to quench my thirst. A cool breeze flutters by and I shiver. He tugs the collar of my pink jacket closer together.
Are you cold?
Not in the least. I lean my hip against the green railing.
I've been working on a list of my own since I met you. A list of places.
What sort of places? I'm floating, as if I'm watching this moment from later tonight, or tomorrow, or a few years from now.
I'm living in the present, but I'm also keenly aware that this is a time I will return to over and over. This is one of those pivots in life, when you see everything through this prism.
Places to kiss you.
I close my eyes for a second, my knees going weak. I can't touch the ground. I'm falling, sinking so far under I will lose myself. And I want to be lost in this night. He reaches for my arm, steadying me. Where?
I want to kiss you at Moulin Rouge. I want to kiss you at the top of Notre Dame. I want to kiss you in one of the covered passages down a quiet hallway where our footsteps echo as we escape the crowds. We'll find a deserted doorway and I'll pull you into it and kiss you like crazy.
This is desire. This is what poets write about. This is what songwriters croon for. This feeling and the sense that it can't last forever, but you want it to. You want to cocoon yourself inside it with your lover. God, yes, I say with a groan that's nearly ripped from my body. I want him so much. I want him to kiss me, to take me, to fuck me. I don't know how to contain this much longer. I don't have room for it. I'm going to burst with lust.
I've wanted to kiss you on bridges, he says, running his hand down my arm, kiss you at cafes and in museums. I wanted to devour these perfect lips at the flower market.
He brushes his fingertip over my top lip, and I go up in flames. Portrait of a melting woman. Canvas, Paris. Medium, flesh and desire. I've wanted you to kiss me everywhere, I say, grabbing his shirt. I've wanted all those kisses. In front of the Eiffel Tower, under a street lamp, on my roof. It's his turn to groan, a sexy, dirty, masculine sound that reminds me we aren't just playing kissing games. We are a man and a woman on the edge. There's only one agenda tonight.
I want to take you everywhere, he growls, threading his fingers through my hair. Kiss you on every street corner,
in front of every shop.
But most of all, I want to kiss you here.
He runs his finger along the side of my neck and I stretch, giving him room, giving him all the room to rain kisses down my neck. And he does. Oh, God, he does. His lips sweep across my skin as night falls, as I fall, as this kiss reverberates in my body, as it echoes in my bones. He touches the hollow of my throat.
And here?
He presses his lips there and I murmur. This man is going to reduce me to nothing but lust and a wish for him to take me home and strip me bare.
And here, he says, dusting his finger over my top lip. This is my favorite place to kiss in Paris.
Please, I whimper, and then we stay like that, hovering as if we're holding a pose, lips brushing against lips. We slam into each other. He pushes me against the railing, and I grab at him, clawing at his shirt, yanking him close. He crushes his lips to mine, a brutal, searing kiss. It's hard, and it's ruthless, and it feels like being claimed. We can't go back to who we were. There's no more time to act as if we're only friends. He kisses me deeply and passionately and madly, and I kiss him back. And we don't just kiss with our lips. Our whole bodies are in this. He's grinding against me, and I'm jerking and tugging and pulling him closer. But I can't get close enough to him. I clasp his face, my thumbs on his jaw, his hands in my hair, and we devour each other. I feast on his lips, and he seems to revel in my mouth. And I'm going to climb him. I'm going to jump him and climb him and do filthy things to him in public. I ache for him. My body is begging, crying for him to fill me. I've never, ever felt like this. Never wanted someone in this kind of bone-deep, soul-crushing way. I can't take it anymore. Judging by the way he breathes and groans and grinds against me, by the way his tongue fearlessly explores my lips and mouth, by the way his hands rope through my hair, he's as lost as I am. Or maybe we're both just finding what we want. How close are you? I ask. A few blocks away. Take me there.
Chapter 22. Griffin. She's never been to my flat before. It's small, unassuming, and roughly the size of a car. But I'm not giving her a tour right now. I have one place I want to go. Her. The second the door closes, I yank her against me. Clothes. Off. She nods, fiddling with the buttons on my shirt, sliding one open, then the next, then another. I tug at her top, yanking it off. And, holy fuck. Her bra is emerald green, and I'm already in love with it. It's lace, see-through, and it holds the two most wonderful sights in the world. This, too. I've only had 10,000 fantasies already about your tits. Pervert, she says with a naughty grin as I unhook her bra while she undoes my shirt. Her bra falls to the floor, and the most perfect breasts I've ever seen are inches away from my hands. And then, yes, in my hands, I knead them, squeeze them, fondle them. Spectacular. Why, thank you. She says, then, as I dip my face to the glorious land, sucking one rosy nipple between my teeth, she cries out. No more teasing. No more sarcasm. Her noises are pure lust, and they make me even harder. I lick and suck as she moans. I lavish attention on each teardrop breast, making sure they're properly adored by my mouth. Then, she grabs my hair hard and yanks my face up. Her green eyes are fierce and blazing with desire. She slams her hands to my chest, running her fingers along my pecs, over my abs, and down toward the waistband of my jeans. I groan. It feels so fucking good to have her hands on me, to feel her fingers exploring my body. Her eyebrows wiggle. Have I mentioned how much I like six packs? No. You haven't. How much? So very much. She slides closer, her hands working their way to unbutton my jeans, pushing my briefs down. My cock announces how incredibly happy it is to see her with a full-on salute. She takes my hard length in her hand, and I swear time stops for a few mind-bending seconds as she touches me for the first time. My eyes close as I savor the intensity of this moment. There's no place else I'd rather be but rocking into her soft, talented hand. So much it makes me want to have my hands all over you, she says playfully, then squeezes hard. I hiss. Electricity sparks all over my skin. If you wanting to get your hands on me comes from having a six-pack, then I'm absolutely grateful I followed that one to the letter. She laughs as I smile. Then we both go quiet as I thrust into her hand again. Her voice is a dirty whisper. Your dick is beautiful.